Okay, we're going to get started here. Sort of out of breath, I had to run through the cattle chute to get here. There was some moves as we went through, and people were shoving, so we formed a wedge, and a couple big guys plowed us through, so we want to thank them for their efforts, and you'll be seeing them on Sunday, NFL. Okay, we have a lot to cover. We have about 3 hours of presentation, so I'm sure you guys don't mind missing lunch. I'm John Paul. It's Chris Hayes. We're from Siemens. We've had the joy of doing virtualization for many years at Siemens on the mainframe, as well as doing it recently for several years on the client server and the Intel platform. Again, this is performance monitoring capacity planning. If you're in the wrong room, please feel free to get up and leave. I feel like I should leave now because, again, this is a pretty good sized room. We do want to give some acknowledgments to people that have contributed to the presentation. This is not the work of one or two people. It's the work of many different people. So we want to give some thanks there for people who have contributed over the past couple of years. And for those that are wondering, I have... Excuse me? Oh. Okay. Okay, AV staff. I can either speak in my parental tone voice, which is louder. Is that better? Okay. So those in front, don't get too concerned about me trying to, chastise you. It's something that I developed with three daughters. Okay. It's interesting that the keynote panel today talked about virtual appliances because we're going to be talking about a very similar topic, though I didn't call it virtual appliance, so that way I'm not the keynote speaker. I'll be talking about performance monitoring and teaching about how to unpeel the layers of the onion one layer at a time. Chris will be speaking about capacity planning. One point you want to make a note on, if everybody is all level set, this is all about common sense and perseverance. You don't need a $70,000 tool to do this work. Now, if you want to send Chris and I $70,000, that's okay, but you don't need a tool to do that. So please keep that in mind as we go through here. Now, when you go through and we start talking about performance monitoring, everyone's heard about the core four. When you talk about the core four, remember very specifically we're talking about cycles, RAM, and in disk we're talking about IOs per second. If you leave here today with nothing more than the strong exhortation that your virtualization team should understand the storage and network subsystems inside and out, that will be a great accomplishment. Again, when you're going down here, I found the keynote very interesting because they were talking about the virtual appliance. What we're talking about here is how to build the virtual appliance by understanding your workloads very carefully and doing performance monitoring as well as performance corrections. Now, again, there are two layers of the virtual subsystem. There is the layer of the overall virtual machine and the ESX hosts, and then there's the layer of the infrastructure below that. Many people stop at the first layer. Most of the problems are in the second layer. So be very careful when you do your performance monitoring and performance analysis that you don't overlook the challenges as you go further down in the context. Now, performance tuning is different than performance monitoring. Tuning is about removing the impediments for the core four. We have found and spent much of our last year and a half, on performance monitoring and tuning. Much of what we found were configuration issues inside the virtual machine because the machines were tuned for a very oversized physical machine. The virtualization world forces you to do due diligence and do your homework in tuning, especially the application layer. It also forces you to carefully design and implement your SAN and network infrastructure. Okay, I'll do my best. I'll start trying to shout. And again, if you're here in the front, start standing up. Please forgive me for that. It's this close now. Any closer will be eating the mic, similar to what we see on most TV shows. Okay. Okay, these three are the designated hecklers in the front, so we're good there. Okay, I'll try to speak close to the microphone. Too much watching TV here in California. We're from Pennsylvania. We see cows and pigs, mostly. Okay, moving forward. Okay, Chris is nudging me because the clock is ticking, though we didn't hit the start button. So we still have 60 minutes. You want to hit the start button, Chris? No? Okay. Okay. One thing it's very important is to understand the various contexts of virtualization. People overlook this, and you tend to get lost for where you're at. So everything I'm speaking about is going to be very much about the five contexts of virtualization. The first context is the physical machine. Everything starts there. Your comparison, even though it may not be a just comparison, is about the physical machine and how it performs. The virtual machine is a singular image on top of a host. Your ESX host machine is next. Your farm and cluster coming in with ESX 3.0 and virtual server, and then the host complex. Those are the five contexts of virtualization. Now, how do we do performance analysis? Identify the virtual context. Why is that important? Because the performance tools are not accurate at every level of the virtualization context. That's especially a problem when your end user is used to using things like Perfmon and Task Manager, comes back to you and says, I'm out of CPU. No, you're not. And then you have to bribe them or something. But anyway, please keep in mind the context you're in. Start at a high level. Start at the overall health of the farm. Why? Because you're looking for problems in the infrastructure. Quite often you'll also find an imbalance across your guest machines or your hosts. Realize that the 3.0 does provide you more balancing automatic functions, but they come at a cost. We'll talk about those a little bit later. The virtual machines, again, you are still in the business of good performance analysis at the individual virtual machine level. Reasonability checks are key. We often see repeat offenders. Look for those first. Keep it simple. If you have to expand, we'll talk about expanding later, expand to the other contexts. Remember, again, the consumption is the key. What are the virtual machines consuming? And how is the consumption and the overall capacity doing? Okay, in this case, this is the virtual context, the physical machine. Which tools do you use? Perfmon Task Manager. You can also go out and spend lots of money for other things. But these things are fine. What I've done here, and please get a copy of the presentation as far as individual key metrics you want to measure. I list them down here as far as the core four. These are the keys to the kingdoms. In some of the later foils, I'll be showing you some problems that are represented by these things. In particular, the disk I/O is a key. Again, things like processor queue length and CPU utilization on the virtual machine aren't real. Be careful of misreading some of these things. Again, physical server resources hide performance problems. You're going to be transferring workloads from the physical servers to a virtual server, and what you will find out is it won't work well sometimes. The problem is not virtualization. The problem is configuration. And I'm going to go through a couple of those reasons later as far as which ones are what to look out for. As far as the core four, try to establish a baseline. There's a technique called a staging server. Staging server is a server that has no other workload on it. Move your workload to a staging server first, test it, establish a baseline, and then move it into your farm. Why? Because you need to know what the thing is consuming. I'm sure everyone here has heard the message from your end user saying, I didn't change anything, and it's not working well. In the virtual world, they'll add, and it's virtualization. And then they'll add, it's your fault. Okay, moving to virtual infrastructure. Again, please educate your VM team on those underlying infrastructure components. If you don't do that, you're going to be doing them a disservice, and you're going to be missing certain key issues here. Okay, we're in the virtual context, physical machine tools. Hopefully you can see that in the back. That's fairly large. I wanted to point out two areas that could be potential problems when you virtualize. Heavy page faults and heavy I.O. writes. Why? Because we all know that I.O. is not VMware's strength, at least in 2.5. These things will cause you an enormous amount of CPU overhead when you virtualize them. In the physical machine tools, again, two more problem areas. Interesting. Okay. We're all awake now. Okay, this is using Perfmon report mode versus the graphing mode. This is very good to use, and again, it gives you a relative performance indicator. If you look at this chart, you'll see that the percent idle time for one of our physical disks was 7%. It was 93% busy. That's not a good thing. In the virtual world, that's not a very good thing at all. And also split IOs. Split IOs do occur in the virtual world. It's not split IO is basically when your data is crossed two different boundaries on a disk layout, and what happens is when you send a single IO down the path, the IO is split into multiple IOs, and IOs are bad in the virtual world. Keep an eye out for split IOs. Okay, we get to the host and the farm cluster. And I'm starting to drill down before we get to the virtual machine. The obvious tools, again, some of the tools have changed between 2.5 and 3.0, but the data is basically the same. Some of the data that used to be in VMK tree and VMK usage has now moved into the virtual infrastructure client or virtual center. So, again, you have to find out where the various tools are and where the various metrics are. So this is a real quick example here. Okay, the ESX host farm cluster tools, again, we're starting to see now the clusters and the virtual infrastructure client. You really need to walk through this carefully and understand how to use this quickly. But again, remember the context. At certain levels of context, the metrics that are being reported are not accurate. Everybody knows what clock drift is probably here. In case you don't, clock drift, the ESX operating system presents the timer interrupt clock to the guest machines, but it's not consistent since the guest machine uses the clock to count performance counters. And to do that, the information is going to be inaccurate. Work your way down underneath the guest machine, the virtual machine, into ESX top, look upwards to find out what's really going on. If you look downwards, especially things like said processor queue length, CPU utilization, you may get in trouble. In the CPU utilization, remember, inside the virtual machine, you are seeing a container that's being dispatched to the hyperthreads or the other physical CPUs. It's not a real server. And I'll get to that a little bit later on as far as the challenges there. And unfortunately, again, we have a lot of stuff to cover, so I'm trying to do it as quickly as possible, but it's really a very wide topic. Okay, at the ESX host level, look at the physical CPU load averages. Look at the percent ready to run. Ready to run is a really, really good parameter to keep an eye on. Though there's a couple of nuances to it, it's basically telling you that the physical machine, the virtual machine, wanted to have the CPU, had a workload, had work ready, but it was unable to get the CPU. If this is about above 5%, you should start to get warning flags in your brain. Ready to run is a very key component. Look for percent wait also. If the subsystem is waiting for something, your infrastructure below the surface may be getting in trouble. Most people, when they do performance analysis, overlook the infrastructure below the surface. And yet, most performance problems outside of a poorly tuned virtual machine are down at the infrastructure level. And the infrastructure, again, is SAN and is network storage problems. Okay, here's a screenshot of ESX top for both 3.0 and for 2.5. I pointed out again the physical CPU utilization. Look out for unbalanced physical CPU utilization and also unbalanced logical CPU. The logical CPU is when you have hyperthreading turned on. This one is somewhat unbalanced, but not real bad. Physical CPU, you can certainly become unbalanced. And you also look at the load averages. The load average is the next line up here on the right-hand side of the bottom chart. That indicates how efficiently you're actually utilizing the CPUs. If it's above the value of 1, you're overloaded. If it's too far below, you may be underloaded. You can afford to have more workload put on there. Okay, people are, I'm sure you're starting to see things like the virtual infrastructure client. There's a lot of information out there in 3.0. A lot of it is really nice to look at, but most of it doesn't help you any in doing performance analysis. It's really all about consumption. These charts are nice, but frankly, it doesn't help you in understanding when you have a problem. So wherever you can, try to use numerics like the bottom of the chart versus the graph. It's much more definitive. Also be careful of how the performance tool is actually computing the statistics. Remember that in the case of ESX, it gathers the information once and puts it into proc nodes. All the tools pull the data out of proc nodes and come up with their own analysis formulas to give you the information. Each are different. So don't use a single tool to give you your analysis. Okay. Again, hit that. I think I'm going backwards. I'm going backwards. It's an IBM laptop. Okay. Okay, we won't go there, which means it's an old laptop for me. Okay, the virtual machine. This is where we're going to spend most of your time. We've done a lot of our analysis in the past year at Siemens. Most of our time has been spent inside the virtual machine itself. Why? Because it's usually about misconfiguration. Again, many metrics I have down here. A couple of the key ones to look at, again, are the I/O reads and writes. The number of bytes for reads and writes aren't that important. The question is how many I/Os are being done, because physical disks have a limitation on number of I/Os per second, whereas they can transfer quite a bit of data. Now, the challenge in going down to the SAN is there's a slide in this a little later on. The SAN has many different single pass of failure and performance bottlenecks we'll talk about. The key metric here is average disk sector transfer time. That is the one that tells you how is my I/O subsystem doing. If that's above 25 milliseconds average, something's wrong. If it's going above 100 milliseconds peak, something's wrong. We've already talked about ready to run in the virtual machine context. Again, another warning, once again, that the resident tools on the virtual machine are not entirely accurate. Use them as nothing more than a gauge for overall health. Look upwards from ESX top and from the ESX system. Okay, this is an idea of a network spike problem using VMK tree in the older release. Now you look at this and say, okay, I have a problem. Well, you really don't, but you should at least find out what's going on. Why isn't it a problem? Because usually if network spikes are causing a problem, you'll see a CPU spike at the same time, because network and disk I/O is instantiated as CPU. On this graph, you see some CPU spikes, but it's not of concern. find out why the network spikes are there. But again, this is not a huge issue. So beware of jumping to conclusions. It's very easy to do that, especially with graphics. This one's a little worse. But again, same issue. High network spikes, what's going on? It may not be causing a problem today, but it may be causing a problem in the future. So investigate some of these things. Warning signs. Sustained usage of greater than 80% of the physical CPU. Spend some time with your ESX book on a quiet night at home. Read how the virtual CPU and the physical CPU are different. If you don't have that concept down, you're in deep trouble. So please do that, again, because this is a major challenge, because most people think about those as the same thing. They are not the same. Memory, again, if Windows pages, you're in trouble. Don't let it page wherever possible. I/O, we already talked about the different I/O pieces. Look for split I/Os. And in the network area, your only real concern that you can look at and actually something to do something about is if the network throughput, as far as the amount of network writes and reads, is too high. You really need to bring in an external sniffer or network analysis tool, because other network analysis tools are so invasive to the operating system that they actually skew the results. So do it in a way that doesn't affect the overall performance. Okay, storage. Why is storage important? If you have a poorly designed storage subsystem, everything will fall apart. You have to start with IOs per second. It's the key. And you have to think in the four types of IOs: sequential reads, sequential writes, random reads, random writes, and the ratios. The other night, after you finish with the one night with the ESX manual, get your SAN manual and spend a week learning how it works. You're saying, I know, this guy's nuts. Okay, you're right. You'll thank me later when you do that, because virtualization puts a different set of rules in place for the I/O subsystem. The storage teams initially are not used to this. A lot of this is education for the virtualization teams as well as the storage teams. Remember, you are now forcing heavy I/O down a single path on the I/O subsystem. That's not how storage teams work. They build storage systems based upon capacity, and hopefully there's no vendors here, but if you ask a vendor what the capacity of their storage system is, they'll tell you the aggregate bandwidth of their overall SAN frame. Ask them for the bandwidth of a single path down the storage subsystem, and the answer will come back as, it depends. Well, guess what? It depends is really important in doing performance analysis. Really important. So you're going to have to develop an understanding of the overall path all the way down to the disk. Individual paths, again, are key. For instance, if you have a SAN subsystem and your front-end processor is spending all its time re-blocking the data, and the front-end processor is a 360 megahertz system, you're going to have a problem. Be careful of how you do your RAIDs. RAID 1 is much more efficient than RAID 5. Mark it down. RAID 5 has double the writes. Why is it important? Because I/O is a key to virtualization. If I/O is running slow, everything waits for I/O. Again, I put some numbers down here. Again, two physical writes. When is a disk not a disk? Many people implement local disk only, and the problem is still there. Once you get into SAN, you are now talking about fabric, switches, adapters, bus adapters, frame adapters, front-end process, microcode. Everything can be a problem. Even our hardware vendors for the front-end SANs are learning about virtualization and the loaded places on their systems. They are having to rethink how they do performance analysis. It's a real challenge. You go to a vendor, pick a three-letter name vendor or four-letter name vendor, all the same challenge. They don't know how to do single path analysis well. That's a challenge. It's a challenge because it comes back on you as a virtualization team. Okay, where do you start with sand pieces? Again, you start with disk busy, sector transfer time, and IOs per second. When you design your infrastructure, you should be designing your storage infrastructure. You should be designing for IOs per second, redundancy, and availability, and then path lengths. I want to add something that Chris probably talked a little later on, but also the LUN size is the key. Because remember, you can queue on your HBA and your guest and your host, you can queue on the LUN, you can queue on the front end. All these pieces have different queues associated with them. Every one can slow things down. For those that know about, again, the different kinds of I/O, remember that if you're doing a sequential write or a sequential read, SANs are very good at doing that quickly because of caching, because they can do look-aheads. If you do a random write can take advantage, again, of cache. Then we come to random reads, which is the bane of the I/O existence. Random reads typically do not use cache at all, because, and the read-hit ratio is very, very low, hence the term random read. What does that mean? It means you are entirely dependent upon a physical disk that you spent $200 for your million-dollar infrastructure, waiting until it comes around and gives you the sector that it needs to do the read. The only solution for random reads is to have many, many spindles, and also to spread your I/O across as many different subsystems as you can. You've got to understand the different kinds of I/O that happens. Now, VMware has put together a VMMark, which is a workload analyzer, and a common workload, which is going to be released a couple months now, I believe. It's good to have some kind of a performance test you can run. I use Iometer a lot. Iometer really works for me. Everyone tells me Iometer is not representative of an average workload. My answer to that is, you're right. It is very representative of a VMware workload, because it goes down one channel and pounds it and pounds it and pounds it. It's a great tool which will tell you what you can expect from your I/O subsystem down that single path. It's iometer.org. Download it. Use it. I found it to be very, very helpful for us, especially when you're testing new infrastructures. Okay, when you get in trouble in the SAN again, work your way down to the SAN. The challenge with the SAN is that the SAN has the same challenges as does ESX. You're competing for shared resources. VMware is essentially a loosely coupled mainframe. That's what it is, which means it has the same problems. You have intersecting workloads that may touch each other at one point in time and go away. One of the lessons learned is there are certain performance problems you will never find. Just live with it, okay? You're going to have somebody, your CIO, tell you, I want an explanation. The answer's got to be, sir, we just don't know. I mean, and then, you know, live with that. So that's the reality of, of course, don't mention my name when I say that, but okay, that's the reality. You can chase down certain paths, and what happened was the intersection of the workloads happened in such a way that it taxed one area of the virtual infrastructure, and it'll never happen again. Remember, when you're doing things like using Virtual Center, it's doing a sampling every so many seconds, every minute. Well, guess what? The problem happened between the samples, or the sample showed the trailing edge of the problem. Yes, somebody's leaning on the light switch back there. All right. Maybe that's a sign. Get the hook out. Okay. Be very careful when you analyze things. Try to look at things like peaks. But sampling, again, is only representative. It's not fully accurate in every situation. Also realize that all the IOs get homogenized in the SAN, which means that the SAN is trying to deal with reads and writes all the same time on different LUNs, on different locations. Very, very hard to analyze a single point. If you can do it, have a staging server, have a separate LUN, analyze your workload, use a baseline, and then put it into work, a full complex. Also realize that the block sizes can be changed by the subsystem as you go. If Windows writes an 8K block size and your sweet spot on the SAN is 8K block size, that block size can change all the way down the path depending upon the microcode and all the hardware the hardware components. So when it leaves your system and it says 8K, it may not be 8K when it gets there. Again, this is not good news for those doing analysis, but you have to know these things. Native SAN tools are about the only way you're going to be able to figure out what's going on in the storage subsystem. Be careful, because they can be their own worst enemy by sampling so much that they skew the analysis. And again, the SAN is not the sum of all its parts. When a vendor says, my ideal size and throughput is this, try to pin them down with what is your real throughput for the various components. The SAN may be 2 terabytes wide and can handle, you know, a huge amount of throughput, but you don't care. You care about that one path. You've got to think individual paths as well as aggregate throughput. And Chris is on.
All righty. Again, my name is Chris Hayes, and can everyone hear me in the back? We okay? Yes? Good. So let's see a show of hands how many people actually capacity plan well, or at least a little bit. Good. Let me know how you do it, because I'm still guessing. So basically, capacity planning is a high-level approach. It's really not that complicated. In terms of what we do in VMware and virtualization, and it's really not that complicated, and it's pretty simple. So we kind of break it down in terms of these steps, and hopefully throughout the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to give you a few tips, some lessons learned, and maybe a checklist on how to capacity plan well. So here are basically our steps, our keys, our blocks, or whatever you want to call them to capacity planning. First, you absolutely want to build your profiles. Build your virtual machine profiles, your host server profiles, and your storage profiles. They are the foundation of what you're going to capacity plan on. This slide and the next two slides are pretty high level, and we're all pretty technical in here, but these are absolutely the building blocks, so we need to discuss these. After you build your profiles, you want to develop your critical resource thresholds. These are the things that you don't want to get close to. Whether they're platform or organizational, you just don't want to be near. So you're going to set your thresholds. So you're going to set your triggers to the point, like a range. Say, you know, I don't want to get to 80%. So for whatever that resource is, whether it's storage, whether it's your host, whether it's your memory, you want to stay away from those. So those will be your thresholds. And then your replenishment timeframes are also obviously critical. So how long does it take for your SAN team or your storage team or your hardware team to get the things racked, to get your lungs carved? And then your resource demand is obviously critical to this. How quickly do I really need this? You know, you're going to develop all these thresholds and your triggers, but if your triggers don't really represent how quickly demand's coming, they're essentially useless. So we've discussed demand and triggers, and then some basic assumptions here is that we're implementing an enterprise class ESX, so Virtual Center vMotion. The advisement is that you're doing it under support ESX standards. So, you know, hosts per virtual center, LUNs per host, and shared LUNs per host, and that kind of thing. So we're not going to get into those numbers specifically here, but we're assuming that we're doing what is standard and what is supported by the vendor. Obviously, we're going to talk network or remote storage. Local disk is usually, you know, you can use it for certain situations in development, but we obviously don't recommend doing that. Four processing units per host, whether it's single or multi-core, we're assuming that in our capacity build and our replenishment timeframes. We're assuming an architecture or network administrator perspective, obviously technical. We're not really focused on the fiscal part of this, although we will talk about it some. And this is not a chargeback or cost model discussion, although we will rag on them a little bit. So again, very high level. When we talk about our profiles and the things that are very essential to what we do here, we're talking about processing shares, we're talking about RAM, you're talking about your networking, you're talking about your I.O. requirements and the total size. And by that total size, that means that all your VMDK files, not just one, not just two, we're talking about all of them together in your storage. So in our example here, we're talking about a profile that is one proc, and our VM that's requiring one proc and 1,000 shares, and a gig of memory, one NIC. We're not talking about a content switch or any backwards routing. And we're talking about one 1 megabit per second I/O throughput, and our, as we go forward, our average total size of guest machine is 35 gigs. And as we walk through this, you got to remember that these are just examples. You should absolutely plug in your numbers where they need to be, and with the checklist that I have at the end, maybe that'll help you. But these are just examples of how we create our profiles. Again, very high level, processing capability, memory capability, network capability, storage, connectivity, that kind of thing for your hosts. But again, when it gets down to it, these are the backbone. This is exactly what you got to count on. So we're talking about four processing units, single multi-core again. We're talking about 24 gigs of RAM. We're talking about our standard networking. So you don't need gig for vMotion, although it's recommended. A gig service console pretty much need. And then we do between two and six gig dedicated network cards to VMs. So again, high level but essential. Two gig HVA cards. And you want your ESX platform, the actual build of it, on fast redundant storage. So again, very simple but key. So now we get into the storage profiles, and then now we start to get into more complicated situations. Obviously, ESX 3.0 presents to us more options. 2.5 in the 2X era, you know, SAN and local, although we don't talk about local too much. It's kind of like the unknown brother. But the comment about manufacturer model and class, see, we're not really concerned. You will be, and I am when I'm at the office, but the manufacturer model and class is not a concern to me, nor is it really, you know, we're talking about ESX, we're talking VMware, but this is capacity planning that you can do for any platform, from any vendor. So the point here is that don't be too caught up on your model, your class, your manufacturer. However, you know, they obviously have their strengths and weaknesses. The point is tiered storage. And, you know, you're saying to me, well, why is this really capacity planning? Well, it definitely is. Tiered storage is not necessarily just tiers between SAN, NAS, iSCSI, and the other options. It's tiers within them. So you can have your high-performing SAN, you can have middle to low-performing SAN, you can have high-performing NAS, et cetera, et cetera. The point there is that although you're trying to build a standard for all these things, all these resources, in terms of what your virtual machines are, we all know variance and deviation and all those great words, they come in all in the forms of virtual machines. They absolutely do. So the point being here is that you absolutely want to be sure that you have tiered storage where possible. We're still working on it. Everyone is. But where you have it, you definitely want to stick with it. And because at some point, you don't need necessarily a print server VM on a high-performing SAN that's going to cost you, you know, $5 per day or whatever for storage. So, again, the point here is that, and we get into sizing standards and the impact for performance and manageability. That's such a key statement because, you know, when you're developing your sweet spot, how big your LUNs are going to be, you need to think of these things because here's the example. Okay, I'm going to make my LUN, and you know what? I'd rather not make my LUN so small that it's a manageability problem for my SAN team. So, for example, 100 gig LUNs. You know, they're great for performance, and we've seen that it works, and it's wonderful. Although, then you get in a situation where you have, you know, how many LUNs required to support your farm. It's a real problem. And then you go to the other end where, you know, you have the performance issues of, you know, it's an example, but 500 gig LUNs or maybe 800 gig LUNs. You get a lot of VMs on them. However, you know, you're going to suffer at some point when you hit degradation in terms of your sizes of your LUNs in terms of how many guests are on the LUN. So again, this is high level, but the point is hit your sweet spot. That is so key. Work with your SAN, work with your SAN team, your vendors, and your customers to understand really what your sweet spot is. Now, when I say customers, probably internal customers, but that's the point. So find your sweet spot and hit it. For this example, our sweet spot, we're saying, is 280 gig LUNs. I know everyone's laughing, but that could be it for some people, for some enterprises. So in that situation, and if we get back to our previous slide about the VM profile, which you don't have to, or you can go for it now. But the point is that at this site, we're probably looking at 35 gig guest sizes at 280 gig LUNs, and that's roughly 8 guests per LUN. So that's kind of our next. That's our storage profile. And again, these are all building blocks. So this is kind of a review, but this is also kind of a segue into from capacity planning to replenishment planning. So you obviously want to, you know, we've been talking about building our profiles, and when you do that, keep your core four in mind, the processing, memory, storage, and networking. You want to establish your critical thresholds, which we're going to talk about in the next few slides. But the point is, they're platform-based and they're organizational-based. The platform has specific, you know, whether or not they tout it, which they wouldn't, but they have specific thresholds where you don't want to get to, whether it's for processing, whether it's for memory, etc. And your organizational also has a threshold that says, You know, we need to be at, and this also includes run rate, we need to be at X number of guests, sorry, virtual machines, guests is not politically correct anymore, but you need to be at X number of VMs per host for this to make this profitable, and, you know, or to make it even workable. And the point there is that this is not a fiscal discussion, but it always comes down to that, and we all know that. So, view the forest and the trees. This is such a key statement because, in the sense that when you capacity plan, you know, you're looking. It's so easy to see the whole farm. It's so easy to see the percentages. You know, I'm at X percent, so that means that to trigger a replenishment process. But you always have to remember that, you know, there could be one or two guests that could absolutely throw that to a loop. The point being, you have one or two virtual machines that is, you know, over-consuming, underperforming, and the point is then you have to make a decision. Is my decision to, A, can I fix it? Is it something I can fix? And if you can't, then you need to decide, B, am I going to pull this off onto its own host, or am I going to actually pull it out of virtualization? Because it can dictate, that type of thing will obviously dictate, you know, how much it is virtualizable. And if you end up going down another host route, well, then you've actually blown out your capacity plan in a sense. So, again, the idea is see the whole farm and see the guests. Don't let the guests one VM or two VMs that are underperforming dictate your capacity plan. But you need to be sensitive to them. They're very sensitive things. So anticipate your expectations or exceptions. That's absolutely true. We all have variances. You want to develop your realistic resource replenishment timeframes. If the SAN team tells you it's going to take them 3 weeks to get a lung car view, make sure you plan for four. I mean, it's that simple. Again, not complicated, but so many people don't do this well. And I'm not even sure that we do it well, but we try. So incorporate challenges, accommodate delays, capacity demands, again, are so critical because you can set all the triggers you want and thresholds you want, but if you are not there with your actual demand, and demand is not easy to figure out, as we're going to see in later slides, but so you want to establish an accurate, useful replenishment triggers. That's kind of your end goal. Can hit that for me? All right, so we talked. I said I would give you some critical thresholds, and here they are. And again, you may not find this anywhere on any certain vendor site, but these are definitely things that we've learned. So you want to plot your critical thresholds based on performance, availability, and supportability. That's so simple. But you want to base the thresholds on your platform organization considerations. So again, you know, based on what, you know, what the platform does and what your organization needs, you need to base your thresholds. And here we have, we've seen CPU degradation at an 82% average across the farm, or based on host as well. So you need to stay away from that number. So as you'll see in the next two slides, when I give you an example of our thresholds, we're not going to get near that. We're going to, you know, we're going to be at 79 or 80 rather than 82 or 83. The memory is 75%. We definitely see degradation at that point. And, you know, this is such a controversial statement, but SAN, we've definitely seen, regardless of what you want, what frame, you know, what wherever you are, and even we've seen it with local storage as well, and with NAS, you're going to have it right around 85 to 89%, where your volumes are completely full, or the device itself, you're going to see degradation. And that can vary, but that's a generalization. And your run rate, you want to weigh your supportability with your fiscal pressures. So your fiscal guy says, I need at least, you know, 20 guests per host to make this work. And then I'm saying, well, you know what? I don't like that because it's all too many eggs in one basket type of thing. So again, when we talk about replenishment timeframes and triggers, we're talking about hosts, memory and storage. When do I need it? How much do I need? How long is it going to take? All right. So now we get down into some more details. Now, when you talk about, we're going to talk about two metrics. We're going to talk about critical host metrics and then storage metrics after this. But again, these are all very repetitive. These are all easy themes to understand. You just need to go back and apply them. You need to understand what your run rate is. We're talking about VMs per processing unit. Figure that out. Obviously, you have, or else you wouldn't be here, but keep figuring it out because it changes. Average processing allocation per farm, peak and non-peak, that's a critical metric. Again, we said that, you know, you want to stay right around the, well, actually it's down here too, but the point being is that those are critical metrics, and you also need to understand your exception cases as well. So those are the guys that, again, the non-average cases, the guys that are over-consuming, underperforming, you need to account for those when you're capacity planning, and your fulfillment timeframes are just as key as anything else is. So this all kind of weaves into like a rug. It's like a puzzle that you have to place together. So in this case, our host replenishment threshold example, we'd like to stay between 3 to 4 VMs per processing unit, which averages between 12 and 16 VMs per host. In this example, that's what we'd like. And that was accepted by our fictitious CFO. So he was okay with it. average processing allocation per farm, non-peak, we want to stay between 50 and 60%. 60% is our peak. We don't want to get there. 70, 80 is obviously for, that first was non-peak. The second is peak. 70, 80 is peak. We want to stay under 80%, and we want to stay between 65 and 70% on the memory allocation and 75 to 80 for peak memory allocation. So, again, these are just examples, but they are legitimate examples that could be used and have been used. I think we can go ahead. Storage metrics. You kind of get in the same situation. You obviously have a few metrics you want to look at. One is the total utilization of the actual volume itself. So you have many volumes. You don't want to. We set a threshold. We want to be under 80%, as you can see below, under 80% of a volume itself. Again, I said earlier that threshold was right around between 85 and 89%. But again, you want to set these thresholds to an achievable thing in the sense that we don't want to get too close to the top end of it. Your other metric is the storage infrastructure. So whatever that may be, whether it's a frame, whether it's a shelf, whether it's the fabric itself or the FA, you know, whatever that may happen to be, we want to stay under the 60% value. And that's a tough one. That's a real tough one because of the cost and the timeliness usually of replenishing storage. So, and then we say, we're assuming that in these examples that we've kind of jumped ahead, but in these examples we're saying that all these values that you're seeing here, I've already calculated them. We've assumed platform limitations. We're assuming fulfillment timeframes and demand in the example. So, you can go ahead. So again, in repetition, we're talking about these are the steps that we take every time that you consider capacity planning. So you're determining your standard profiles, you're understanding your thresholds, you're evaluating your time frames, you're determining demand, and you're setting your triggers. And in the end, you want to develop a repeatable process. So our magic thermometers. This is kind of what it looks like in the sense that these are our thresholds. You know, 100% from a VM perspective is your run rate. How far do you want to take this? How many guests per host do you want? And then we look at the CPU processing. And then we're talking max utilization again, the high point, 82%. SAM we're saying right around 79%, and RAM is at 75%. And then you're looking at with this next thermometer, we're saying, okay, what's my replenishment process? And the thermometer speaks for itself, but we're saying it's going to take us 90 days to get a new host or a group of hosts. We're saying it's going to be 60 days to get new SAN, whether it's a frame or whether it's a LUN, and we're saying that it's going to take 30 days to get new RAM in. And this assumes that it's not only in, but it's racked, it's functional, it's wired, all those great things. So, and then this next slide is going to show us how they look together. So your triggers are on the left. You're saying these are the things I want to stay away from. And then you also have to understand what you have to account for your demand. So in the next slide or two, we're going to talk about a calculation, a formula to follow. But the point here is that set your triggers and understand demand. Because demand, once you set your triggers, you're going to have to say, all right, I need to now go figure out what my demand is because maybe my triggers aren't realistic to my incoming requests. So here's the checklist. Like, if you're going to take one thing away from this, this is what I would take away from this. And also, there's notes to this in the actual PPT that in the you're going to see the replenish the. So we'll just go through it. Identify your core components. Again, this is a review from what I've been saying for 20 minutes. Develop your critical thresholds. So what are the pain points? When is it time to order more resources? The replenishment timeframes. How long? How much? That kind of thing. What's it going to take? And what is the current forecasted demand for the resources? So, again, you're saying there, you know, we talk about the established capacity replenishment triggers. The whole point is that the replenishment trigger is really your critical threshold minus how long it's going to take you to get, and it's influenced by your demand. And I do have examples in the notes that you can see, but basically it's that simple. Capacity planning comes down to these steps, and there's no question about it. So... So hopefully you take that away and you can use that in your dwellings. This is kind of like an editorial of how we feel when we talk about capacity planning, but it's totally technical versus tactical versus financial. Is, you know, how far do you push your thresholds? Your financial guy always wants to be as close to that number as possible. When he asks you to tell him, what are my thresholds? You know, don't tell him the truth. Tell him lower, because the bottom line is he's always going to want them to be higher because he wants to get that return. Roy. Return on investment for him is key. So we obviously, we're looking at, is everyone committed to capacity planning? Because if they're not, it's going to be a problem. And these are all things, these are just bulleted points, but these are all things that take days and weeks to get done. Innovation, if we can build it, they'll come. Let's build more. Your CTO is all about that. But the CFO says, wait a minute. This is great technology, but we can't afford this. Have we budgeted for this? What is our cost model for this? Capacity planning does not replace a technical roadmap, that's for sure. The roadmap needs to be there from your architects, your ivory tower architects, and those who make those decisions. And then your capacity plan, although you shouldn't wait to the end for the capacity plan, it needs to happen as you're building your farm. And every time you go through an upgrade, you should revisit, like when you go from 2.5 to 3.0, you should revisit your capacity plan because it does change. Chargeback models, they live separate lives, but they cross paths, that's for sure. Every time you say capacity plan tells me I need to replenish, the CFO, or not even the CFO, even the other guys will come back to you and say, well, can we afford this? Does the chargeback model support what we need to do? Every time we update version, we usually have to revisit the capacity plan. Don't neglect it. Budget planning and capacity planning is not the same. This is so obvious. One's money. One is essentially time for profiles, time thresholds, and replenishments. But again, if it's so easy, I didn't see too many hands either. Like you definitely need to pay attention to all this. So let's go to the next one. So these are kind of lessons learned and what we've seen so far. Obviously, you want to develop your capacity plan first. Everyone gets into this technology. Everyone's like, wow, this is great. Let's keep going. But the biggest mistake you can make is not to plan first. Create that thresholds. Create your profiles. Create your thresholds. Create your replenishment timeframes and create your triggers. Growth will happen faster than you, obviously, we all know that it happens so fast. Anticipate a learning curve for hardware, network, and storage teams. The best thing you can do when you're developing a capacity plan, come up with a sketch, come up with a rough draft, and talk to them about it. Make sure it's realistic. Master the cost model. You know, we said we weren't going to talk about this. You know, there's one thing more important than the capacity plan in this discussion, and it is the cost model. Because the point being, if you don't have an accurate one, everything you do here is almost in vain. You absolutely need one, and there's no other way to say that. So make sure you have your cost model developed as you're going on with your farms, and make sure that your capacity plan, in a sense, is cross-referenced with your cost model. And set the ground rules. I don't know, if you give out the keys to the kingdom early, it's not a good thing. So be sure that you assess what things you want used in the farm, how you want them used, and essentially limit those who don't need to use it. Obviously, you want to plan instead of react to capacity. And the other thing about virtualization is, you know, everyone says let's virtualize. You could probably virtualize a beer cap if you really wanted to. But the point being to that is that should you? You know, I love virtualization. It's all I do. It's all we do as a team. But the point being, there's some things that at this point just are not, it's not worth the investment to virtualize them. But make those decisions wisely. You can virtualize 90% of things you want to, but some things you shouldn't. And we've just learned over the last 3 years that, you know, you push the envelope. So that's also in terms of your profiles. That's how you establish your profiles. These are some of the things that this is how we want to support virtualization in this environment. These are the things that we are going to virtualize. It changes your business, absolutely. Again, make sure that everyone is on board with what you're doing. Make sure you have your vendors, your hardware team, your storage team, your networking team. They all need to understand what this actually means to them. And I think that is pretty much it. So if there's any questions, you can shout them out. Again, I would absolutely check out the notes because the notes have a lot of the calculations you're going to want in terms of fitting this into your environment.